Good morning. Here we are, poised between a divisive presidential election whose aftershocks are still being absorbed, and a holiday in which we gather in gratitude. Whatever one's political position or values, this has been a wrenching season, revealing the diametrically different worlds that the citizens of one country inhabit. The victorious candidate painted a dark portrait of a nation in decline. It rang true for many people. J.D. Vance is a Yale Law School graduate who defied the odds of his Appalachian origins. His memoir, Hillbilly Elegy, describes the experience of his family and community, their low expectations for their own lives, the feeling that their choices don't matter, the awareness that their lives are less coherent and less successful than those of their parents. He cites a sobering finding from the Pew study on economic mobility. While Blacks, Latinos, and college-educated whites believe in a brighter future for their children, working-class whites do not harbor that same hope. Instead, they see dead ends and a bleak horizon. There is no group of Americans more pessimistic than working-class whites. Chaos begets chaos. Instability begets instability. Welcome to family life for the American hillbilly, Vance declares. This pessimism is pervasive. The darkness of despair has been visited upon this country before. Near the tidal basin on the National Mall stands a sprawling granite and water monument to President Franklin Delano Roosevelt. Two bronze sculptures by George Siegel depict the depths of the Depression. One is an urban scene of five men shuffling on a bread line alongside a brick building. The other is a rural scene, two figures in front of a rundown empty barn, their only possession a wooden chair. Siegel entitled this sculpture, Appalachian Couple. Inscribed on the granite are words from FDR's second inaugural address, uttered in the midst of the Depression. I see one third of a nation ill housed, ill clad, ill nourished. We are poised between the election and Thanksgiving. For contemporary inheritors of those who were ill-housed, ill-clad, ill-nourished in Roosevelt's day, darkness is born of feeling left out and invisible. For those who were stunned and grief-stricken at the outcome of the election, darkness is born of hatred unleashed, provocation and prejudice, and policies promised. We have known, we have seen fear before. We have faced darkness, despair, and uncertainty before. But just as we move from the election to Thanksgiving, just as we look toward the day this week when we will count our blessings, in previous times of despair, we have not remained fixed, dwelling in darkness. Indeed, etched on the walls a few steps away from those forlorn figures are the four freedoms that FDR's presidency, and indeed our whole country, hold dear. Freedom of speech, freedom of worship, freedom from want, freedom from fear. If the bread line and the Appalachian couple stand for the despair of pessimism, where we are gathered today, literally in the center of a great university, symbolizes the promise of optimism. Education urges us to new frontiers, to discovery, to opportunity, to empowerment. It is no surprise that the word light appears in the motto of so many universities, from Yale University on the Atlantic to the University of California System on the Pacific, from sea to shining sea. As Isaiah prophesies, the people that walked in darkness have seen a great light. They that dwelt in the land of shadows, upon them light has shined. Light, learning, the freedom to imagine, to create, to shape the future, the work and study that we have the privilege of being engaged in on a university campus gives us great freedom and consequently a duty to use it well. When visitors exit the 7.5-acre monument to President Roosevelt, we see the words freedom of speech, freedom of worship, freedom from want, freedom from fear, inscribed near a flowing fountain. An inspiring cascade of water, plunging from enormous boulders into a giant pool, expands our senses. The sights and sounds nearly speak. They call to us, telling of optimism, of promise, of power, of boundless prospects. Freedom in this country, if we heed the invitation of the overflowing fountain, belongs to all of us. But we can't leave our civic responsibilities to others and expect to remain free. We are not the recipients of freedom. We must be the progenitors and caretakers of it. If we believe that our future can be bright for all within the borders of our country, we have to act to ensure that promise. In today's biblical text, water becomes the crucible for action. When the Israelites crossed the Red Sea from bondage to freedom, they were not only crossing out of Egypt, out of slavery, they were also entering an unknown future. It was a moment filled with fear, seemingly without escape, with the Egyptian horses, riders, and their chariots at their heels, and the billowing waters spraying their faces. And in that moment, according to the rabbis of the Midrash, it was an ordinary, unheralded person, Nachshon ben Aminadav, who summoned his strength and plunged into the sea. He might have been gripped by fear and remained on the shore. He might have succumbed to despair and let the darkness of the deep overcome him. But he didn't. He acted, and so became the one who brought the Israelites to safety, to freedom, to the future. The rabbis speculate about how this came to be. What motivated an unsung hero to step into the breach? Perhaps reflecting their own temperaments, they offer three distinct alternative possibilities to account for his action. In one, his companions remember that Nachshon was the first to make a ritual offering. And so they bestow upon him the mantle to be first here as well. Or a very different image. Nachshon is so fearless and determined that he pelts his brothers with stones to ensure that they wouldn't beat him to the water. Or huddled together with other terrified people, growing more panicked at the Egyptians gaining ground, Nachshon is caught in a jostling crowd. He loses his footing and he falls into the waves. Whether dignified trailblazer, brash show-off, or hapless victim, Nachshon acts. He is changed by entering the fray and by his responsibility to the people who accompany him. I have always appreciated that the hero of the Red Sea was not a household biblical name. Nachshon's leadership is ambiguous and surprising. Only when he enters the sea, when the waters come up to his neck, when he is fighting for his life and his footing and his place, only then do the waters recede. As we read in Exodus, and the children of Israel entered the sea on dry land, only after the children of Israel entered the sea did it become dry land. Only after Nachshon's perhaps intentional or unintentional, perhaps aware or unaware leadership did the sea become dry land. Nachshon's entrance into the waters precipitated the divine miracle of the parting of the Red Sea and the journey toward freedom. In this moment in our nation's story, when we must affirm and protect the freedoms that can be lost in fear, uncertainty, and despair, Nachshon's story resonates. Nachshon is one upon whom the mantle of leadership does not fit snugly. He is one who is surprised by his own authority, yet he looks around and recognizes with humility that he has a role to play in shaping history. In this moment in time, don't we all as well? Our civic lives demand that we enter the arena to journey to a better future. It may be with anger and outrage. It may be filled with fear at what lies ahead. It may be with a sense of inadequacy. It may not be with poise and quiet certitude. But however we enter, we cannot blend into the crowd and complain about what was. We must marshal our voices, our values, our vitality, and help to shape what will be. And for all the capabilities we bring to this moment, we give thanks. Because we are thankful for being educated, we are called to bring light to dark places. Because we are thankful for hope, we are called to lift the spirits of those in despair. Because we are thankful for community, we are called to welcome in the isolated. Because we are thankful for courage, we are called to hearten the dispirited. Because we are thankful for safety, we are called to protect those in fear. Because we are thankful for dignity, we are called to uphold the worth of others. Because we are thankful for security, we are called to protect those in the shadows. Because we are thankful for belonging, we are called to reach out to the alienated. Because we are thankful for love, we are called to spread its promise. As we measure the days from the election to Thanksgiving, I think of the conclusion of Exodus and Revolution, Michael Walzer's book, in which he examines politics in the context of the biblical story of the Exodus. "We still believe," he writes, "what the Exodus first taught about the meaning and possibility of politics and its proper form. First, wherever you live, it is probably Egypt. Second, that there is a better place, a world more attractive, a promised land. And third, that the way to the land is through the wilderness. There is no way to get from here to there except by joining together and marching." May Thanksgiving be a time of gratitude and empowerment. May we renew our conviction, our contribution, and our commitment to civic engagement. May we enter the waters, raise our voices, practice our precious rights as citizens to help our nation to embody freedom and justice for all. Amen.